you know, Matt, this podcast would be so much better
if it was just you and me.
If it was just you and me, without any expert opinion, any input from people who've actually raced the Tour de France, for example.
What do they know?
And so we've banished them from the podcast, and we're sitting alone in the garden area of where we're working.
In the picnic area.
The picnic area.
Well, to tell the truth, we may, a little other than picnic.
We may at some point be joined by Peter Kenyuk and David Miller, but I mean, I'd rather they didn't.
Who cares?
Who cares?
Yeah, tell you what.
Go on.
Let's hear some of the lead commentators at this Tour de France, Ned.
They're going to leave it to the final couple of hundred metres at the top of this climb, the first time in the history of the Tour de France that the Puy Marie has hosted a summit finish. A volcano 6.5 million years old has waited all this time for Lennart Kemna and Dani Martinez to ride alongside each other inside the final 100 metres or possibly even less. Can any of them launch this final attack? Can Lennart Kemna make up that bike leg that he's got from Dani Martinez? A big acceleration, the last throw of the dice for Kemna. Martinez reacts, gets across to him, 100 metres still to go now. Weaving across from side to side, just trying to throw that bike forward now. Lennart Kemna in desperation, trying to hold off the Colombian. But the man from Colombia takes his first ever win at the Tour de France. And there will be many, many more to come, because that from Dani Martinez was brilliant. And he had to fend off two riders from the same team who wanted to make it and did make it so, so difficult for him. Primoz Roglic has only eyes on the clock. There are no bonus seconds to play for here, so it wouldn't surprise me if these two just help each other, and Pogacar's just using the wheel of the yellow jersey here to keep himself in the frame. 44 seconds down on Primoz Roglic. He doesn't want to lose any more time in the general classification, and he will almost certainly, I think, find himself in second place to Primoz Roglic at the end of the day in the general classification. He battles with himself and with his bike and with the gradient so that a gap doesn't open up to Primoz Roglic, holding on to every precious second. But it's another very impressive statement from Jumbo Visma, another huge statement from Primoz Roglic, who is beginning to stamp his authority on this race, and another sign potentially of things to come from Tadej Pogacar.
God, blimey. Cycling has this thing, doesn't it, where you've got two races going on literally at exactly the same time. And the race number one today, that little sort of ménage à trois between Kemna, Schachmann and Dani Martinez, was so absorbing that...
You forgot?
You sort of... Well, I don't know. I think the director forgot.
Yeah. And then, it was almost like,
Pete Kenyuk's joined us.
Oh, yeah. Hi, guys. No, but it was. It flipped back and it was like, oh, hang on a second, there's another race. Quick, go back to it. And it was like, oh. And then it was like, oh, my God, there's a race up front as well.
The Tour de France is being decided.
Yeah.
And it was also such an agonisingly slow climb, wasn't it? It just was such a protracted
reminded
effort.
Reminded me of the Vuelta.
Like, yeah, it was Angliru. It was Angliru stuff, wasn't it?
There was real steep, short ones, yeah, that are just like, they almost like feel like they grind into a halt.
Yeah.
And the producer actually no disrespect to Sam Bennett, but he looked like he was suffering across the line today. And it was that steep. It almost looked like it was slow motion, but it just shows the severity and like the gradient of the last kilometre, really.
What's it called? Las Machucas.
Machucas. No, I can't remember. I can never get it right.
And a horrific day for the sprinters to.
Just to get through. Just to get through.
Yeah. The start of the race today was absolutely insane, wasn't it? For the first hour and a half of racing, it was bonkers. The first attack that stuck featured. Quintet, actually a sextet of riders, including Julien Alaphilippe, Dan Martin, who looked great in the first phase of racing today, Simon Geschke, Rémi Cavagna going off the front to make it two riders into a quick step up the road again. Pete, again. Yeah. And not coming away with anything. Oh, your curry smells amazing, by the way.
It tastes so good. So good.
And Benoît Cosnefroid.
You know what?
What?
When we were on set at the end of the day then, and we took sometimes actually with the Tour de France being the Tour de France and everyone gets fixated on the actual general classification rather than the stage win, that's sometimes the stage when it gets
ignored.
And actually you forget that Dani Martinez's attack to get across to the break with still 190 kilometers to go was a race winner move in itself. Like he stormed across, didn't he? He was in the drops going uphill.
It was incredible,
and we were obviously privileged to see it before it came on air, but it was he had sunglasses on, but you could almost tell behind his eyes that I'm actually, like, I am here to win today.
Yes.
Just like his demeanour.
I am a man possessed.
Yeah.
And then the groups kind of formed and reformed. And over the top of the first climb of the day, there was the second group on the road. By this time, Benoit Cosnefroy had been dropped, unfortunately, for him. Although, because of the riders who are up the road, actually hangs on to the jersey because no one can threaten his points tally.
And no one even
tried anyone get
to,
close
really?
In the end?
No, I mean, we were in the somewhat amusing situation of Geschke taking 10 points and at the first climb. And actually, this is a ridiculous hypothetical situation, but had Geschke managed to win the stage and take all the bouts in his jersey, he would have been level on 36, because Benoit Cosnefroy started the day on 36 points. There were 36 available on the road today,
yeah,
except for the fact that Simon Geschke started the day on minus two King of the Mountains points.
Surprised no one was locked at this.
And Hugh Carthy started the day on minus one.
Yeah.
And the reason being that both of them had this. So it was a really strange rule, which is you get a fight before sheltering in the lee of a vehicle in a way that's... it's a 500 Swiss franc fine.
200, isn't it?
Or is it 200?
200, I think, yeah.
And it's 25% of the total of the green jersey points and mountain points available on that stage.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. It's really... So, I mean...
And imagine
so
I figured that one out. All sat around the table.
So, Carthy got that on stage seven, and he lost, I think, 13 green jersey points and one mountain point, and...
Geschke lost six green jersey points and two mountain points.
Yeah. I mean,
and 20 seconds in GC.
It's the only sport in the world that you have to follow with a pencil.
Best part about it is, though, sit behind the car for 200 metres or 10 kilometres. However, we're going to work out on percentage of the stage, mate.
Yes. I love it.
Yeah.
I love it every day, Matt. You kindly print off the yesterday's results, the tableau d'honneur, you know, and all the results from the... And then you kind of put it on our desk and it lands with a
thump. It's like,
what's the score in this? Well, it's 27 pages long.
Yes, exactly.
Anyway, so it was a very dynamic hour and a half of racing, and eventually the second group on the road consists of Lennart Kemner, Hugh Carthy, who kind of like attacked a bit, and Danny Martinez. Then they were chased over the first climb by Pierre-Alain Warren Barguil, a rider whose name I can't read in my own handwriting, Nicolas Hedet, really can't read it, David de la Cruz and Pavel Sivakov. And then there's a third group with the rather ineffective Romain Sicard and Maximilian Schachmann.
And then a fourth group
exactly. of one rider on the road. All on his own, called Vincent Madouas.
Valentin.
Did I just call him Vincent?
Yeah. Also, you said a group of one rider.
Because that's the way cycling works.
I know, sorry, I'm just fixated on...
Strange cycling terminology.
Yeah.
Fourth group on the road, one person.
It's easy to criticise someone, isn't it, apparently?
Don't take it at heart, Pete. Anyway, all that lot got together eventually.
Group, one rider, group!
Exactly.
Settle down and be quiet back in your...
Paulus.
Whatever it is.
40k to go. Nielsen Paulus attacks.
Does.
5 kilometres later... Maximilian Schachmann
attacks.
And did you see when they got together? They sort of, Schachmann came up alongside him and sort of obviously said something to him. They both started laughing and they started riding along, laughing and racing. And it was just magnificent, just wonderful.
Maybe Nielsen Paulus had heard the same story that we're not going to repeat about an incident at the Borahanskara training camp.
No, but I
know we're not going to repeat it, but I'm just saying maybe that was what Nielsen Paulus was smiling about, because it certainly made us smile.
But he has a unique style, Schachmann, doesn't he?
Because I don't know what it is.
Well, how did you bombarding me with little... I was trying to commentate, and I'm getting WhatsApp messages from Pete going...
No, that wasn't about... That was another incident. Not an incident. That was about humour, sense of humour and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Let's not go there.
No, we won't go there either. There's lots of things we're not going to go there today.
It's not worth it, for anyone's sake. But, it reminds me of the...
In case you get the impression you're getting all the behind-the-scenes information.
Yeah, you pinged me with WhatsApp messages about this as well.
What's the...
The Churchill nodding dog.
Yeah, but what is it? What is the advert for?
Churchill.
Yeah, not Churchill himself. What's the company?
Car insurance.
Right, car insurance.
An advert for Churchill. Winston Churchill.
Obviously not.
It's advertising.
No, I said, what's the advert for? And Ned said... What did you say just then?
Insurance.
No, he said Churchill.
Churchill Insurance.
No, you actually said Churchill, so I said
my WhatsApp group messages from you go, lol, and then Shackman, and then spelt like a kind of like a fishing shack with a CK, which I quite like. Churchill dog in car that dogs. And then I think it was an autocorrect. You meant to say nods. So that's another message. And then you go, Churchill, like that. Oh, I see, but you didn't know what they're trying to advertise. Well, it didn't work very well as an advert.
Anyway, that dog that you kind of just nods.
The ITV Cycling Podcast is brought to you by Churchill, the dog that nogs.
The former politician.
Nogs, pogs, rogs and dogs.
Well, yeah, pog and rog. That came a bit later in the day. Yeah. Anyway.
But anyway, everyone so those two will got know
together.
What I mean.
Shankland went off alone with 18k to go. And he built up a handy little lead. And he was sort of looking good for it, except that you knew that the final...
To be fair, it was genius, again, like yesterday, in the sense that the two riders that tacked off first, it was actually they were the ones that made the race in the end, because the two riders that came after them were from the same team.
Yeah. So, yeah. No, absolutely. And behind them, Ineos Grenadiers moved to the front, and effectively, you had basically a 30-kilometre climb.
But what were
finish.
They doing? I don't understand why they were doing that, because they didn't have to. And
they were attacking themselves.
They were attacking themselves, and it was they don't have the strength to do that. And they ripped it to pieces, and then they were just basically destroyed Bernal.
There must be, it must be unusual for them to be, it is unusual for these riders to be in this position, and they must be searching around for the formula that is going to turn the tide back their way. And maybe, David, they just reverted to type, and they thought, well, this is what's worked for us.
Sivakov is up the road as well, that was weird.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Yeah.
That's not very Team Sky / Ineos-esque.
No, but although there were other riders up the road from GC teams who didn't do what Sivakov did and kind of sat up and waited straight.
But De La Cruz, what was De La Cruz doing? I mean, in
neither
the end,
thing,
they
the
were
other.
Proven, whatever anyone in UAE Team Emirates did was proven to be correct by the fact that...
Also, let's not forget Castrovecchio and Kwiatkowski are the only two riders who have been within this team before at the Tour de France, like Amador, Carapaz, all new guys.
Van Baal?
Van Baal, he was there last year as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's like
Luke Rowe.
Yeah, but I mean, wasn't there
in the final?
Yeah, it's
phase,
like it has been a team that has kind of been thrown together last minute.
Mm. Yes,
really.
Yeah,
with the additions of Carapaz and Amador.
But we're falling foul now.
And you go back to the Route d'Occitanie, and you see what a fabulous lead out in the mountains Sivakov and Tel Gegenhardt and Carapaz and Amador gave him. And that isn't what we saw today. Sorry, no. Ned, go ahead.
Well, we're falling foul of the same sort of problems that beset the French television director today a little bit, aren't we? We don't know which way to turn. We don't know whether to focus on the stage race or the GC race behind. So maybe we just deal with the stage race.
Yeah.
Martinez found himself on a very steep mountain, two successive steep mountains, really, well, hills. Hill stroke mountains,
with
somewhere
two
in between the two.
Very volcano. Good mountains. To, very good mountains.
On a volcano. He found himself on a volcano.
Very good riders to deal with. I mean, Schachmann and Kemna are quality.
It was a climby version of the edition of Omloop Het Nieuwsblad that Ian Stannard won when he was in that group with all the Quickstep riders. Do you remember?
Yeah, I do.
It was a climby version of that, wasn't it, really?
It was. He was being worked over by Bora.
He was being walked over.
And they worked themselves over.
Yeah. He was a very cool customer, though, because when he had Kemna with him, he never didn't get stressed about it. He wasn't Alaphilippe-ing it and elbowing.
Just,
and kind
he
of
was on the front as well.
He just didn't look
wasn't
once,
he just
did he?
Kind of
all the whole
just
time.
Didn't question. Yeah. He knew that Kemna wasn't going to ride because he's got Schachmann up the road. And instead of allowing it to work him up and get him frustrated,
yeah,
he just did the job in hand and chased down Schachmann.
And even when it was just him and Kemna, he stayed on the front and let Kemna make the move and then just reacted.
It's advantage when you're the best climber, I guess.
Yeah.
It was what you wanted to do.
It's like, go on then.
Yeah.
Because his first attack when he attacked Kemna didn't do what he wanted it to do, but maybe it was just a testing attack, and then he said, well,
he slowed it right down.
He slowed it right down,
back.
And then I know I can do it in the final 50 metres or 100 metres or whatever it was in the end. Yeah.
We have... Danny Martinez, in his own words, ladies and gentlemen.
He doesn't speak any English, does he, Matt?
I don't know. He certainly doesn't speak any English in this interview.
So we're in a situation where, because we can't subtitle on a podcast, you are going to be cast in the role, once again, of Danny Martinez.
Well,
Do you know him well?
Yeah.
What's he like
been
as a
to
guy?
His home. He's fantastic. He's amazing. He's a lovely, lovely guy.
He grew up in Bogota. Actually, in all seriousness, after we've heard from this interview, I want you to fill us in on the background a bit. But he's kind of grown up most of his life in Bogota.
Between Bogota and the countryside to the east of Bogota, And so if it was, I'm thinking, well, if there was West Country or Wales,
if there was
or something
a distinct
like that.
Regional accent from this part of Colombia, what would you equate it to, the nearest? You think West Country Wales? Or,
yes, I think.
A Welsh accent and a West Country accent, two very different things.
Ladies and gentlemen, yeah. For you tonight,
which way is it?
I have Danny Martinez, the Welshman.
Welsh Danny.
Welsh Danny.
This is High Jeopardy.
Oh, yeah, and plus, the interviews are by Seb Piquet.
Yeah.
Right, who's ASO, he does race radio and everything. And his questions
daytime
are
daytime TV, Seb.
Yeah.
Matt, do you know if you are really bad at Welsh accents? I happen to be really good.
Oh, yeah?
I'd give it a good crack, yeah.
Yeah?
Give it Kenyuk.
I've spent months
give
in
it
Wales.
Yeah? Give it Kenyuk. Yeah?
I love it. Have well, I tell you what, I'll be Seb.
You be Seb Piquet. Okay.
Because Seb is a Parisian.
Yeah.
So he's going to be a Londoner, isn't he? Right.
Yeah.
And all the questions are sort of, he's not really a, because so all the questions are basically say, God, like, it's incredible, isn't it? Right, that's all. So the first one is, the question. Danny, here, right, to win right. In Paris-Nice is
okay,
great.
Oh, beautiful,
to win right, in the Dauphiné is brilliant, right? Oh. But to win at the Tour de France is incredible, isn't it?
No, honestly, but I'm really, really happy, honestly. The Alps are very special for me. I felt good at the Dauphiné. And to come back now and do this incredible... I dedicate this win to my son, who will be two in a few days, but...
Oh.
So this is for him, but you know what I'm saying?
Right, and it's incredible, right? After all the falls and the disappointment.
No, listen here now, but from the start of the tour, it has been hard for me, not gonna lie. After the fall, my legs were not good, and I was worn down, but seriously though, although mentally I was good, I knew I could win a stage, but because the feelings were there. Honestly, I've done it. Thank God I've done it, but thank God.
Yeah. Tell us, though, about the final, right, with Kemner and Shackman.
No, this was like a night out in Cardiff town, but 5K to go, there's bodies everywhere, wasn't there now? We went... When we finished the final climb with 10K to go, I said to myself, that's Shackman, he's normally stronger than me.
Descending.
And on the flat, he's a great time tyrer, so he is. He's at 40 seconds, could you believe it? And I thought, I'm riding for second place here. No bloody way. Then, when I caught him, I thought, I don't think Kenmark can beat me in the final sprint. Because I was so strong.
Yeah, right. So, can you believe what you've done? Because it's incredible, isn't it?
Honestly, right.
Yeah,
after all the effort of forcing the pace and sprinting, I was aware of what I'd done.
I wasn't aware.
But to be honest, the stage win at the Tour de France, I mean, come on. After G winning it last year, this is so special for Welsh cycling, isn't it? But.
Hey, there we are. A little bit of elaboration there, but essentially.
G didn't also win it last year. It was the year before, won it now.
Well, who cares about the facts? This is the ITV.
Sorry, guys.
Yeah, and do you know what? We could also hear from Leonard Kemner, who's at the other end of that. Who
Bremen's Sportsman of the Year.
Bremen's Sportsman of the Year.
And Berlin Sportsman of the Year, right there.
And Berlin Sportsman of the Year, Max Schaffmann. Max Schaffmann.
Oh, what? Yeah. Yeah. Well, listen, here is Leonard Kemner.
We'll see. Leonard, we've just heard you say that Max Schaffmann laid it on a silver platter for you, but there's not a lot you can do when it's an uphill finish, and even if you have two teammates, the strongest guy wins, I guess.
Yeah, probably, but still I could save some energy in the valley. I didn't need it to pull when he was out. And also afterwards, I always can stay in the wheels. I don't have to take any turns. So that was the best thing he could have done for me. And also for himself, it was a big chance for sure. But still, yeah, I would have liked to finish it off.
We remember how happy you were on the Galibier last year in Valois when you finished fourth, I think.
Yeah.
I guess there's a bit more disappointment this time.
Yes, it is. It is, absolutely. Because that time, yeah, it was a big, big, big achievement to finish fourth. It would be still a really good result to finish fourth. But this time I just had the shot for the win, which I didn't have there. So now I'm more disappointed.
Thanks a lot.
Well, all right, so that's the stage.
Tell us about Danny Martinez.
Danny Martinez is his family is from a little village about 100 miles east of Bogota called Vergara, Cundinamarca. And you go to the village and then go down, a couple of miles down a country lane, losing a lot of altitude. And he has a little finca, a little farm, next to a river called the Pinsaima, which is incredibly beautiful. And 20 or 30 metres below the river, there's a seam of emeralds. Sort of priceless emeralds, but it can't be mined because it's way too expensive. It's beneath a river and bloody, bloody, blah. And the family cultivate land both sides of the river, and they find a lot of indigenous artifacts when they're doing that from, you know, 500 years ago and so on. And he, in 1998, his older brother was about 14, Jason, and Danny was about 10. And they had a sort of little family party, and the following morning, one of the neighbours said, "You realise that the FARC were all around the house, and that the FARC guerrilla army, they lay down the law, and there's you're not allowed to have family celebrations and that sort of stuff." For some reason, they didn't intervene, but they left Vergara that day because Jason was at the age about 14 when the FARC kidnap children to turn them into child soldiers and soldiers and brutalize them, and to save principally Jason but also Danny, they moved to the south of Bogota, Bosa. And Danny always says, "We weren't a displaced family, but we moved before we would have been displaced, or something far worse would have happened." And he grew, and actually in Bogota there was never any support for cyclists, but he was in the south, just on the sort of on the edge of Bogota, in another town called Soacha. And in Soacha there was a guy, you may remember, Walter Pedraza, who rode for the first Tinkoff restaurants team. Yeah. And some riders from south there, and he was always fabulously good. And he won the Junior Tour of Colombia in 2012.
Yep.
And the following year he was Pan American time trial and road race champion. And as I say, so this is when Bernal was the best mountain biker of his age group in Colombia. Danny was the best road racer, and he's lovely. And I've been to his house, and he gets the machete out, and we go and cut sugar. You know, he's from a peasant farming family, and he's also got the urban side, and he's magnificent. I admire him enormously.
It's funny, isn't it? Because from everything I've understood, Jonathan Vorters has a lot of belief in the prospects of Sergio Higuita, who's a fabulous talent.
Yeah.
You don't read too much into the form of any one given race. Mm. But it strikes me that Danny Martinez is well worth investing in. Ooh, to yeah. Every bit as much as Sergio Higuita.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah. To see it says that Paulus Higuita and Danny are the sort of future. But it's interesting, Luis Fernando Salvarriaga, who coached Higuita all the way through since he was 12, tweeted the other day, "I think you're going to get much more out of Sergio at this stage of his career."
Okay.
By allowing him to target a race like Liège-Bastogne-Liège rather than sending him to the Tour de France and expecting him to perform.
Sergio?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
Whereas Danny's goods are ready. And he had that. I thought it was quite a nasty crash in Stoke. So he went down slack hard. Yeah. So, but anyway, I think Danny's ready for stage races.
I seem to remember, didn't he get was it this year on the Tour of Colombia that he got kind of wiped out in a training accident or got hit by a car 2 days before the race started and then won the Queen stage or something like that? No?
Ooh, Rendlero's ring a bell?
Mm. I'll have to look into that and see if I can scratch away that story.
Yeah, yeah.
But what I do know from him, because I think I mentioned this in the commentary, the first time I saw how good he was, Matt, was a couple of years ago in Lombardia.
Yeah, I
think
remember
it was the Thibaut Pinot race.
He
won.
It was.
And there was a group of contenders who were just all sitting on the wheel of Martinez.
That's right. He was doing that for Rigo, and out front there was Thibaut Pinot.
Yeah. And he took a lot of time back all on his own, didn't he?
He's exciting to watch as well, isn't he?
Yeah, he's dynamic and he's muscular and he's got a lot of courage.
He's got like a flair, hasn't he, about him?
Yeah.
That just, you don't often see.
Punchy acceleration, yeah.
Yeah, we like Danny Martinez, yeah.
There's a great book about Colombian cycling, isn't there?
No,
I gather there is. I understand there is.
Es Pasión.
Ooh, yeah. Colombia Es Pasión.
Nah.
You heard it first here.
Yeah.
No, you didn't hear it first.
Go on, then.
You've been banging on about it for weeks.
Yeah.
And then the GC race, David.
Yeah, that was, well, we kind of, as you said, the director was doing a bit weird in the sense that we were deeply involved in that battle between Schachmann, Kemna and Martinez, and we missed big chunks out of the actual GC race behind. And when they did finally cut back to it, it was after Pogacar had attacked. So yep. We missed when Ineos had stopped, or just they'd run out of riders. And then we got a clip afterwards. It looked like then Sepkus took over. So even Dumoulin had been distanced at that point. So all you had were the GC leaders left. Nobody had a teammate apart from Roglic, who had Kuss. But Kuss didn't go very far by the looks of it. And then as he slowed, Pogacar launched. And that was, about a K and a half from the top. And then that was a definitive move. Nobody could go with it apart from Roglic, who went with him immediately. God. Just like didn't hesitate. And then the two of them, as we know, they're compatriots, they're also friends.
Yeah.
They were completely committed, the two of them, to working together. Not that it was going to make much difference on a 15% plus slope, but they were turning. And you could see, there was almost this sense where, maybe it's just me, there was a sense where Roglic didn't want to drop Pogacar. There was that kind of, the way he was winding it up, he never looked behind, he wasn't making it more difficult than he had to. He was more in this kind of, this was the first proper GC battle, if you like. He was more committed in just distancing everybody rather than playing games with Pogacar.
Yeah.
And I thought that was quite interesting, because at the moment there's still something to be gained from that unity from Pogacar and kind of benefit and distancing everything else. He's still 44 seconds behind.
I see what you mean, yeah.
And then kind of making sure that when they do...
Bit of an ally.
Exactly. So, and that is interesting. Behind, Bernal was immediately distanced from that group. Then there was Uran. And then you had Richie Porte, who's fantastic. With who was he with? The other two riders at Richie Porte?
Landa.
And Miguel Angel Lopez.
And so those three. So you had the front two, those three, then one by ones, and Bernal just looked like he was...
suffering like that. Yeah.
I've never seen him look like he was trying.
Richie will take a lot from that today. The guy who rides on confidence and sort of... Yeah, I think he'll do well going forward.
He's looking like a man who's got a podium
especially for the day after tomorrow, which will suit his kind of ride.
You know what, I think Richie Porte's benefiting off the fact that it's actually been said publicly this is almost his last go at GC as he goes to Ineos Grenadiers next year. And then there's the fact he lost that time. So it's almost like the shackles of
he hasn't got anything to lose, has he?
And so he can actually enjoy this.
Yeah.
And anything he does from now is a bonus.
Yeah. Do you know what? It's interesting you should say that. It makes me think of Bernal last year in the time trial that Alaphilippe won. You remember Bernal didn't really do very well and was really disappointed. And he had that same thing. It kind of... And his coach, Javier Arteche, said it kind of unblocked him in a sense. Yeah. Having sort of messed up and had to put a disappointing performance in sort of freed him to win the Tour de France, and he hasn't had that now. He's locked in where he is, and he hasn't got the fluidity and the freedom to.
Yeah, I can imagine almost being a form of expression. Fly on the wall at the dinner tonight to Trek Segafredo, and Richie Porte will be all smiles.
You
can imagine him being really happy at dinner tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Bernal will be kind of a bit hung, you know, and it's like, and then Pogacar
almost looked a bit stiff, hasn't he, Bernal? Yeah. Like just,
but I can just because Richie Porte, as Pete says, he's kind of. He needs morale. He needs he needs to be happy, because he does.
And when he's happy, he is
he's ecstatic,
almost better than anyone.
Euphoria,
as well.
Yeah. And I think I'd be really surprised if he doesn't do something pretty special.
I agree.
Yeah.
And he can time trial.
Oh, I was about to say exactly that. And he can do exactly that type of time trial as well. You
30 kilometers and then up plunge to Belfi. I mean, is it ever a perfect, perfect time trial for Richie Porte?
The cancellation of all these races and lockdown has been greatly to his benefit.
I agree. Yeah,
because he's a rider. Because
he always hits the ground running with the Wollongong hill.
And then the longevity of the season, I don't think, and having to just stay on it for so long. Like he's an amazing guy at kind of committing to a certain target, and then after that, he then struggles to maybe keep that going.
Yeah.
For the months after, but
I first noticed it. I watched the Mont Ventoux challenge where he finished third, I think, in the end, second.
And
Vlasov won it, that very talented Russian climber from Astana. Mm-hmm. But Richie Porte looked like the Richie Porte of kind of 5 years ago, you know. He really did.
And you know what else plays in his favour as well? Bauke Mollema's gone, he stepped off today, he's not there as
crashed out, didn't
so
he?
There isn't that.
Broke his wrist, I think.
Is that right? I hadn't heard
In that fall. And that's worth, you know, reiterating. There was a fall, there was a touch of wheel, cross of wheels, wasn't there, between Nairo. And
look at me.
And Romain Bardet, who of course was in this was his home stage, wasn't it?
It was, yeah.
Brioude being his hometown.
Brioude being about 150 kilometres away.
Well, yeah, but Clermont-Ferrand, the whole...
Got a nice cream in Brioude from his favourite shop.
We did. And his favourite flavour was...
I remember that.
Unsurprisingly, vanilla.
Yeah, that's the most relevant.
So his hometown's 150 kilometres away from... So that's basically the equivalent of my hometown being Liverpool. Living on the Isle of Man.
That's what it sounds like.
Actually, yeah, I was going to say.
No, actually, even further.
Scouse Pete.
Oh, here we go.
Yeah, we have Egan Bernal in his own words.
Okay.
We can have a bit of that.
Yeah.
So Egan, you've lost, I think, 37 seconds to Roglic. How did you feel on the last climb?
I felt good, actually. I tried to do my best, but they were stronger than me, so I can do nothing, but actually I was feeling good during the whole day. Yeah, we need to see what will happen in the next days, but I'm looking at my numbers and I'm doing one of my best numbers, and yeah, if the others are stronger, I can do nothing.
Maybe it wasn't the best climb for you. It was a very explosive climb.
Yeah, maybe, who knows. We need to see, and they go day by day.
Yeah, I mean, he came up.
Stay focused, still focused.
So
and you know, try to just manage the efforts and go day by day.
And we got a bit of Sepkus. I was going to say Dolfkus, but Dolfkus is Sepkus's father, who used to be the US cross-country skiing coach and was 60 years old when Sepkus was conceived.
Whoa. Jeez.
Congratulations. Yeah. Anyway, Sepkus.
Grew up speaking German, didn't he?
Yeah.
Sepkus.
Yeah. Although his father was not born in Germany. He was born in Leadville.
Leadville. Oh, as in...
As in the 100.
Yeah, as in Floyd's of Leadville.
Where's his mum from?
Germany.
Are they both... Oh, his dad's from...
Norway. Dolph? Norwegian?
Leadville.
Yeah, well, they're American.
Oh, yeah, I know that. I thought there was...
Germany.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Of course it means kiss.
I was brought up speaking Germany. German.
I thought his mum and dad
German, the language is German.
Kiss.
Germany's the country.
From different countries, sorry.
Yeah. Let's hear, should we hear the interview anyway?
All right, yeah.
So Bernal told us that, well, judging by his numbers, he's just as good as last year. Does that sort of tally with what you're seeing out there, that a lot of other guys are where they should be, but Primoz is just better?
Yeah, it's probably hard to compare it race to race. I mean, so far it's been a really explosive race, you know. We haven't raced too much before this either, so everybody's fresh, everybody's motivated. There's no telling what it'll be like in the third week. Maybe we'll all be crawling to the finish, but it's a super high level.
And just on the strength of how strong you guys have been for the last month or two, there's been a bit of speculation about the fact you've done too much or you must be getting tired now, but did you show today that there's still a lot left to come from you guys?
Yeah, I think there's more to come. I mean, we pick our days well, I think, and you know, not every day we're riding all out, you know, like the sixth stage, for example, where it was also a tough finish. We thought, it's a good time to take time, but it's not necessary now where the race situation is going, so we saved our energy there. But on days like this, we can race more aggressively.
Thanks
a lot,
sir. Cheers.
Guillaume Martin and Romain Bardet. Oh, man.
What does Guillaume Martin have to say about
that? I don't know. Have we got a Guillaume Martin interview?
I think we have.
Yeah? Well, let's hear it in his
own
words. Did
you mention Nietzsche, do you think? Not being a climber.
That's sad.
Yeah.
Guillaume, the verdict, the bilan of your day?
It was a hard day, of course. The second last climb was really steep, and the pace was just too high for me. I had to drop, and I was really close at the top, maybe less than 10 seconds, but I couldn't close the gap. And so at the end, it's a lot of time lost, but it's like this.
And we asked you this morning about your back. Was that affecting you today, or was it just a day when you didn't have your best legs?
No, I'm not looking for excuses. It was just a bad day.
Yeah, oh, it stank for the French today. Every single one of them.
Oh, Alaphilippe.
Pinot. Yeah,
quite on it. Pinot attacked. Okay. And then backwards.
Pinot Grigio.
Yeah. Pinot Grigio.
We'll have some of that tonight.
Alaphilippe, Bardet, and Guillaumatin, all of them.
KO.
Really. What's L'Equipe going to write? It was funny, yeah. L'Equipe has got to the stage in the tour in which it's talking all about, you know, because Bardet, he always attacks, perhaps lacks a bit of power, but he knows exactly when to attack. What happened to Bardet? Nothing. Guillaumatin, the intelligence, the precision. He's a rider on the rise, nothing. And I don't know what they're going to write tomorrow.
I don't know. I glanced up at the France 2, as I said, the Zeppelin studio just at the end of the race, and they were five or six very glum faces around there. I think they're going to maybe just park the Zeppelin.
Well, I tell you what, Slovenians first and second.
Colombians third, fourth, fifth, and sixth.
That's insane.
Yeah, yeah. And Adam Yates.
Whose brother won today in Tirreno Adriatico and took the lead.
Yeah.
And Adam's looking all right. Mm. And he's going for GC, isn't he?
Yeah.
I mean, he's...
Yeah. Yes. All these things are true.
Guillaumatin. Yeah. Oh, did we hear from Guillaumatin in his own words?
We did, didn't we? Yeah, I think we did. Yeah,
forget that.
Sunweb did nothing today.
Oh, nothing at all.
No, but it's really interesting.
Totally.
I think it's interesting. They were all in for nothing.
Yeah.
There you go.
That's. See? I think it's noteworthy. Because virtually every other team tried to get in the move, and Sunweb visibly didn't.
Tomorrow is the day, guys. Watch out.
Visibly didn't.
Tomorrow is the day.
And don't forget that Romain Bardet is off to Sunweb, and I wonder what will happen to Bardet when he gets a bit sunwebbed. Could be a positive thing for him, I think.
Yeah, I think so.
Or negative.
I mean, you do, once again, you do forget that thing about cycling, where part of the duties, part of your professional duties, when you're not on the attack and not working for a GC rider, is to rest. And your goal for the day, Ned, is to finish last today and use as little energy as you possibly can. And that's part of the sport as well, that, you know, often, people, you know, that sometimes needs explaining.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you've just explained it.
Yeah.
Did I?
Yeah. Yeah.
Was it a good explanation?
It's a very good explanation, yeah.
It was needed.
Yeah.
So what are we going to see from next year then? A perfect lead out into the bottom of the climb from Sunweb for Bardet and then nothing happened?
Wow.
Or are we going to see Bardet improve on his GC performance, or are we just going to see a completely different Bardet?
We might see Bardet, forget about GC at Grand Tours, we might see Bardet...
But what do you after this tour?
Hey?
You're all right.
Yeah, we might see him win Liège-Bastogne-Liège or Strade Bianche.
There's a big spat in Le Parisien newspaper yesterday morning, to two days ago, where Hinault was saying of Pinot, you know, this man is not cut out to win Grand Tours. Why do they persist? Why do they keep putting into his head that he is? Because, he's there to look at him. He's there to win stages. You don't, when you're injured, you got to fight. You know, he doesn't have the, and it was quite interesting that there were...
backlash.
Yeah, and the various people have then turned around. L'Equipe, Alexandre Rose, who's L'Equipe's principal cycling writer, and what's the name? FTJ.
Mathieu.
They've all sort of said, hold on a minute, Bernard. Mathieu is brilliant. He goes, when you were a rider, you believed in what you did. Now, Bernard, allow us, please, the indulgence of believing in what we do. And you're going, except Bernardino's argument is unanswerable.
Well, there's a difference, isn't there, between having potential to do GC, which he obviously does, and actually doing
physically
it.
And everything.
And actually doing it, which we've talked about before.
Yeah. There are some riders who just are always going to have a bad day. And that's... He'll find a way of having a bad day somewhere.
Yeah.
Should we, tomorrow, should we watch the Tour de France on the telly?
Yeah, why not?
Stay in.
Yeah.
Yeah?
All right.
Yeah.
See ya.
Bye.